This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
Ash Public Radio.
And a very good afternoon. Welcome to Sports Talk 870. I'm your host, Earl Robinson. I'll be with you until 2 o'clock discussing sports with you. So just give us a call at 355-9527 or toll free 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Our first guest today is going to be Michigan State's athletic director. Mark Hollis is joining me, and we're going to talk some of MSU athletics right here on AM 870 and look at how the budget is going at these times. For all colleges, the times are definitely tough trying to expand and just maintain the budget. So let's bring in Mark Hollis and talk a little budget with him today. Mark, how you doing, buddy?
Good afternoon, Earl. It's great to be with you once again.
Yeah, it's always good to be with you. You know, I know we'll see a lot more of each other in the fall, of course.
Absolutely.
Hey, but I know with the budget, we've got our big four sports here now. You got basketball, football, hockey, and baseball is going strong. But what about those other sports? You know, when you look at all the sports, and I know you've got to try to manage those, and when you're giving out money or say to the sports that bring in the most money, how do you manage that for those that don't bring in that much money? Because, you know, they've still got to be supported as well as the ones that are bringing in money.
Well, Earl, it is a challenge. And speaking to the class of 1962 last Thursday afternoon here on campus, and one of the statements I made, the challenge of an athletic director today is to compete against all the great institutions that are out there but not spend any money doing it. And that's what you want to try and do as an AD is keep that balance. But in all seriousness, it is, you know, it is a daunting task. There's two sports at Michigan State, similar to most programs, that have a net profit, and those are football and men's basketball. And for the rest of the sports, you're looking at net deficits anywhere from the range of $400,000 a year up to near $3 million. So you're reallocating funds, but it's the perspective you take into that that's so important. One is the Big Ten Conference, as well as Michigan State, feels very strongly about maintaining a lot of opportunities for individuals to participate at Michigan State. That means the institution, the athletic department, specifically generates funds for those kids to be able to attend courses here at Michigan State, to graduate, to become productive members of society. So you want to keep that number going. Michigan State has, as you know, 25 sports. That's about the average of the Big Ten, a little above the average in the conference. And you look around the country, and there are other leagues like the SEC that averages in the 17, 18 sports. And, you know, fewer opportunities as you look across the board. But, again, we feel it's very strong to have that, or very important to have that broad-based program to provide opportunities. And, you know, it does become a challenge. Some of the folks on campus and in the athletic department, you have to educate that, you know, every dollar spent in one area means it's not being spent in another. So it's like when you're home trying to figure out how to make your budget balance at home. You have to do the same thing on campus. I think the last thing I'd throw into that is, you know, the day I took the job, somebody asked me, what's going to be the most important thing for you as an AD? And my response that day, and it continues to be, is to have the faculty on this campus understand the value that athletics brings to the Michigan State community. As you know, there's no tax dollars, there's no general fund dollars that come into the budget. It's what we earn is what we bring back, but there's also so many values coming back from concessions, from parking, from licensing, from jobs in the area, from the revenues that come into the community. I think somebody did an assessment between Michigan and Michigan State that nearly $100 million is generated on an annual basis for the state of Michigan from just the two football programs. So there's a lot of good that comes back, and then, as you mentioned, the distribution of those funds is is the toughest part of the AD job.
And especially when we look at fans, and I know you have to account for them at some point, but how do you account for those fans who are such diehards, say, for some of the Olympic sports? As you know, we've got a strong contingent of fans who want to support gymnastics, wrestling, and sports like that. How do you balance that out and with what some of those fans watch, even though they, of course, they're not as numerous as they are in football and basketball, but, you know, they're very passionate about their sports.
They really are, and I think, you know, at the end of the day, the unfortunate part is there has to be a level of financial support in order to move forward positively with any program. And it's been proven that when that financial support comes forward, and I'm not talking outrageous support, but some where there's a commitment and there's a dedication, more so than just perhaps complaints. You know, we used to be great, now we're not. Fix it. Well, it takes a village to fix it, and I think you're seeing that with many of our programs. And you know, when I feel like the department, or when I feel like myself as an athletic director, or those that support the program aren't stepping in, I've always taken the approach of what can we all do in order to make things better. And that's what we've done in many sports, but there's many more that needs a significant level of improvement, both in the competitive arenas, but also in the engagement from different divisions within the department, but those that want to support externally. It's as you know, it's not a cheap venture anymore.
No.
to keep an individual sport operating at the Big Ten level.
Yes, and I was thinking about while you were talking there about those sports that the fans, you know, the fans love their sports, as we mentioned earlier, but those sports that are, for example, I guess I would say that aren't the big money makers, but how do you balance that with the facilities? I mean, I know there's been a lot of facilities expansion here at Michigan State and just about all around the Big Ten. Are you still looking to expand even more, or how is the expansion at this point?
Well, when you talk about expansion, I think there's specific sports that obviously need an enhancement in facilities in order to compete at different levels. And it again goes back to, you know, as an athletic director, the worst thing that you want to go through is a reduction in your sports sponsorship. It's a very painful process. So part of what we're trying to do is sustain, not make generational changes, but sustain programs in such a way where you can, over time, develop the type of investment by those that support a specific sport or support the department as a whole, where we can reallocate some of those funds. I mean, as we sit here at an $80 million budget and you look comparatively against teams that we're competing against at the highest level, you know, that budget dwarfs. I know football budgets that are equal to what our entire athletic department budget is. So at Michigan State, like our faculty, like all over this campus, it's the people that make a difference, and we really do get a great return for the amount of investment that we put in. But, you know, you look across, there's things in the stadium that need to be fixed. Many of those are not donor-oriented type projects. They're fan convenience type adjustments. There's also a number of sports that you look through and you do comparisons with those other schools that you're trying to compete with. And made a lot of progress on Old College Field, and expectations are that it will have a positive return. Yet there are others that have very antiquated antiquated facilities that are overcome by the type of people that you have on board as far as accomplishing what you're striving for as an athletic department.
Yes, now, you mentioned earlier about trying to make sure that the professors and all the people that work here understand, you know, that they don't, that, you know, your income is just generated from ticket revenues. And how is that going? Do you think you've reached enough people? Is that something you still have to keep going and reminding people that we are not getting state funds from the athletic department aren't using funds just for athletics?
I think it's important for everybody on campus at times to open up the door, walk outside, and see the other great things that are happening on our campuses, especially at Michigan State. And you look at the work that's being done in the College of Education. You look at the growth of the cyclotron into the EFFORT project and all the efforts that are going into that. You look at a study abroad program that's ranked among the top in the world. It's important that those of us in athletics understand the research, the cancer research, the projects that are happening all over this campus. And I think likewise, you want to get that same appreciation that we are one institution and we are all doing great things. Athletics ends up on the front page for a variety of reasons, both good and bad. And you want that appreciation, and you want that unity that a university campus should explore. I think, many of the interesting events that we've done, I keep coming back saying that is research and innovation. That's what happens on this campus every day. And for those few events, we got to do something different that was more academic in nature versus specifically sports in nature. And I think that's the beauty of a campus that's operating at full clip, and that's what President Simon is so phenomenal at, is building what's called the Spartan family, or building the Team MSU approach. It's getting that appreciation, and I sure know that, as a student here, I fully appreciate everything that goes on beyond the walls of athletics. It's making sure that we all can kind of look over that fence and say, wow, that was really great. That affects me. When something good academically happens on this campus, it's great for the athletic department. And I think we need that common thread in order that all of us can achieve at the highest levels.
Yes, because you're certainly right about that, Mark, because we do. As you know, I've been here for too long to mention, too many years to mention. But, it's very appreciative for me. I do understand how the athletic department works and the funds and how you have to allocate funding. But I'm just not so sure that so many people outside of that do. I mean, some do have a good understanding and a grasp of that, but there are so many that don't. And I don't know if you can bring them into the family or if you can ever get them to understand how you're just a small piece of the pie.
It really is. It's, a lot of time is spent on athletic budgets and comparisons, and it is a small portion of, the global budget for the whole campus. And yet we understand, that we're an auxiliary. I think if you look at housing, Vinnie Gore does a fabulous job with all of the ancillary activities that he has on this campus. The two of us are ancillary parts of the campus that are designed to generate revenues, are designed to create positive. In Vinnie's case, it's a lot of programming that reaches into alums, obviously the current students with the unbelievable communities they've built on campus. But athletics is the same case. We're supposed to be a positive for this campus. We're supposed to create an attraction for students to attend here, a release, and a place for folks to gather. And it's how you do that in a way that's accepted. If you know my background, you don't like to raise prices, you don't like to gouge, you don't want to create situations where people feel uncomfortable attending events, and it does get frustrating to go through that. You can always say, but the other people are doing it. Well, we're Michigan State, we'll do it our way, but if you step back and you look at what it costs to go to a Spartan football Saturday, relatively speaking, great value. I think what Mark D'Antonio's done with the program is miraculous, and he will continue on that direction. We feel very comfortable where that program is. But quite frankly, as I look at our coaches, I'm comfortable where most of the programs are, and I see a future that's brighter in every one of them. And that's what you want to achieve as a program, is that sustained success. It's not peaks and valleys. It's looking 5-10 years out where you want to be as an athletic department, but more importantly, where do we want to be as a university? And that's what we're trying to hook, our wagon onto is the school as a whole, as it continues to grow and develop. We want to be part of that.
Okay. Hey, Mark, I want to thank you for joining us. Always a pleasure talking with you. I know I'm going to have you back again because we got to have a discussion on coaches one of these days. As far as, you know, coaches for all sports, they're constantly rising. I don't know. I know it's not your fault or anything, but we got to have a discussion on that one of these days.
Sounds good, Earl. I appreciate it. Okay. Thanks for all your work.
Thank you, Mark. Okay, bye-bye. And that's Mark Hollis, MSU's athletic director, talking sports with Mark right here on AM 870 WKAR. It's 20 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870 WKAR.
This is Neil Conan. In the week ahead on Talk of the Nation, Europe strains to save Spain from default and with it, the euro. Political junkie Ken Rudin with a new trivia question on Wednesday. And Thursday, Old Jews Telling Jokes, a new off-Broadway comedy review. Join us for that and much more in the coming week on Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 2 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Thanks for tuning in. This is Scott Pohl. Partly sunny today and breezy too. Scattered showers and thunderstorms with a high of 85. A chance of rain and thunderstorms and a low of 61 tonight. Cooler tomorrow, the high 72, windy and sunny Tuesday. Sunny with a high in the low 70s Wednesday.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527, or toll-free, 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Well, as you know, many of you know, even if you don't follow boxing, just about everybody heard of the big fight this past weekend, and Timothy Bradley upset Manny Pacquiao. A lot of people believe that Pacquiao won the fight, and of course, you know, I've read already that they are not going to review the judge's decision, so it's going to stand as far as we know, but we're going to talk with one of the best officials in the state of Michigan. Frank Garza is with us, and he's a boxing referee, and he's been doing a great job for a number of years. And we're going to bring in Frank and get his opinion on the decision this weekend. A lot of people say it's a bad mark for boxing. I don't know if I really say it's a bad mark. There's been a lot of bad decisions in the past. So let's bring in Frank Garza and get his opinion. Frank, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, doing really good, Earl. Good to hear from you again.
Yeah, good to talk to you, too. I know we've been around boxing a long time and definitely love the sport, but how upsetting was that decision of you that they gave it to Bradley over Pacquiao this weekend?
Well, the only thing that upset me about it is the fact that it will postpone or probably prevent the Floyd Mayweather-Manny Pacquiao fight from happening for a number of reasons.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and, you know, we've all wanted that, and it still was uncertain whether it was going to happen or when it will happen. I thought eventually it will be happened, but, you know, the way it's going, it's just no telling when we'll ever see that fight, if we'll ever see that fight, or if, you know, it can still happen, even though he lost. We've seen a lot of fighters lose a fight, but it may not be as appealing, but it still might happen one day.
But, you know, getting to the fight, Earl, I didn't watch the fight, but I was communicating with some people on a blog that were watching a fight, and the first round went to Pacquiao, second round Pacquiao, all the way up to the sixth round, and I thought to myself, well, it looks like Pacquiao has it in the bag. I'm going to go to bed because, as you and I both know, the fight didn't start till a very late time.
Yes.
So I went to bed thinking that Pacquiao had won the fight, and was quite surprised the next morning when I found out that the decision went to Bradley.
Yes, and that's the thing, you know, you and I were in bed, and not together, of course, but we were in bed, and I got woke up out of my sleep saying people called me and telling me that Pacquiao had lost the fight, and I was surprised to hear it, but, you know, we know Bradley's a good fighter, but, you know, things do happen in boxing. It's not always a feature or always a pleasing aspect of the sport, but it's still a sport that you have to look at. And, you know, a lot of people just don't like the sport, but hey, what can we say? Things do happen.
Well, the thing that we can say is this, and there's a lot of people that don't understand the scoring of boxing.
Mm-hmm.
And as you and I both know, it's very subjective.
Yes.
And I always say whenever there's a controversial decision or a questionable decision, my first response always is that beauty is in the eye of the beholder. what one person sees or what one person wants to see or what one person likes to see is totally different from another person. And if you're not in that judge's seat, your opinion doesn't really matter.
Mm-hmm. I think I told you on the phone today, the fight looks, when you're sitting there right next to the ring and you're judging the fight, as opposed to sitting, up in the stands, and I've been up in the stands before as well, but you can see the fight totally differently when you look up in the stands as opposed to when you're right there by the action.
Well, you know, too, and you're bringing up a very good point, Earl, when you come to a boxing match as a judge, you have no preconceived idea of who is going to win or who is going to lose. You're totally unbiased. However, as a boxing fan, I know that when they come to the fight, they already know in their mind who they want to win. And for many fans, they come already before the fight. They already know who won in their mind.
Yeah. That's true, and that's one of those things. I know we can never change that, and we like the fans, their passion, but I would like to think they can be objective if their fighter doesn't win, doesn't get a decision, or loses a decision. I mean, there's no doubt, of course, when they're knocked out, but it's when those decisions go in, and if you think it's a close decision, and I've had to review a few fights that were close decisions because. You know, sometimes when you look at a fight from a judge's standpoint, it's just that the rounds are so close. Some of those rounds are so close, and you just have to pick a round, or either you just call it a draw in a round. And I hate to give, put draws on. I like to prefer to give, someone wins and someone loses. But when you look at some of those fights are so close when you have to make a decision on the draws, it makes it very tough.
Well, Earl, let me turn the tables on you, and let me ask you a question. You know, earlier in this broadcast, you said that this was another, something bad for boxing, and people used the term, gives boxing a black eye, another black eye. But let me ask you, do you think this really hurt boxing or did it hurt Las Vegas? I'm leaning towards giving Las Vegas more of a black eye than the sport of boxing.
Yeah, I would say so. It hurt Las Vegas more. I mean, they put on so many big fights and everything, so I think it definitely hurts Las Vegas a little more. We've seen bad decisions in the past, that's for sure. It could hurt Las Vegas in the long run. We know if the rematch comes off, as they say, November 10th, we'll see the rematch between Bradley and Pacquiao. And if Pacquiao does what he's supposed to do, he could win the next one. That's for sure.
Well, I'd like to see that rematch in Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm alluding to. When you look back at all the controversial decisions or major controversial decisions that have taken place in the last, let's just go say, the last 5 years, the majority, if not all of them, have happened in Las Vegas.
Yes.
And Las Vegas isn't the only town that has the really big fights. We've had a couple here and Texas and California. But wouldn't that be great to have the fight here?
It would. It would be great to. It would be nice if we ever get one of those fights, and if we get a major fight like that. It's been a long, long time since we had a major fight in the state of Michigan.
Well, Timothy Bradley was here in January of last year, so
yep.
it's not an impossibility. And then we did, right prior to that, we had the Super Six tournament here, so so we do get we do get the big fights here, not as many as we'd like to, but we do get a couple of them.
Yes, and that's good, and hopefully it'll come back, and we'll get a few more. But when you talk to folks, how badly do you think they think it hurts boxing or just hurts when it's a decision that the public doesn't like? How much of an effect do you think that has?
I think it has an instant negative effect in the fact that in this particular case, people laid down $49.95 for the pay-per-view. And it's just like whatever it is that you purchase, whether it costs you a nickel or whether it costs you $50, you want something in return for that. And, like you're talking about a draw or a controversial decision, people don't want that. They want a definitive product. They want a definitive winner. Mm-hmm. And I've said this in the past, the popularity of MMA, that's, in my opinion, one of the reasons that MMA was able to gained so much popularity because there always is a definitive winner.
Either
the guy taps out, or I mean, very rarely do you see the way the sport is structured. Very rarely do you see the winner going to a decision.
That's true. That's true. Usually it has, like you say, usually they tap out or they're knocked out. But usually you have a definitive decision. And like boxing, where you can you get a disputed decision. And, you know, some people will say, even if they, you know, I've always said boxers know whether they really know whether they win or lose. And if they lose a close decision, they may act like they won it, even though they might have lost. And they might have known they lost the decision.
It's just something that has to run its course. I mean, yes. You know, and boxing has always been that way. We had Mike Tyson, who is always a definitive winner. He just went in there and he knocked the person out. And then that wore thin after a while, and people wanted to see Mike Tyson fight. They didn't want to see Mike Tyson go one or two rounds. They wanted to see him. They wanted to see more of Mike Tyson.
Yeah.
And then they wanted to see someone beat Mike Tyson.
Mm-hmm.
And then after he got beat, then the tables turned and they wanted the old Mike Tyson back. And same thing with decisions. People like the decisions, but then after a while, then they want the knockout. So I think this is just a natural course of boxing, and it's just a cycle that we run into.
Yes, it is, and unfortunately, you know, I was asked, "Is this give boxing a black eye?" I said, "No, it doesn't give boxing a black eye." I mean, if you still like the sport, I think people will still like it, even though they may have not liked that decision. I don't imagine that few people that bought the pay-per-view would just stop buying pay-per-views or stop doing it because they didn't like that decision. I mean, we know boxing. You know, we have to comment about not only the officiating in boxing, but there's a lot of betting that goes on in the sport. And, you know, as we said a lot of times in the past, boxing is probably one of the easiest sports to fix in some ways. You can bribe a fighter. You know, you can bribe a judge or an official. So it's one of those sports that, you know, if you want to influence the decision that way, you can certainly do it. And boxing is you don't have to worry about escaping from that. But people will try to get a fight and try to influence the fight one way or the other.
Well, I got to be a little defensive on that, Earl. And I've been official for 28 years or give or minus a year or two. And as you know, I've officiated all over the world, and all levels of fight from amateurs to world championship bouts. And I can honestly say, I have never ever in all my career ever been approached or tried to be compromised in what I do. That in all the sports that I've been involved in. I've always found boxing to be the cleanest sport around. And if you look back at some of the scandals, there's been baseball, basketball, and football, and of course that's on the professional level. Mm-hmm. And the collegiate level, we've had scandals in football and basketball. But I don't think that we've, other than somebody doctoring their hand wraps or something like that, or the gloves, as far as betting or trying to fix a fight, I don't think that we've had that scandal in a number of years since maybe the 40s or the 50s.
Yes, you know, we haven't had it before, but, you know, you always hear those rumors. And that's the thing, I guess, I just heard too many rumors over the years. People are always saying that something is wrong with boxing or that, somebody got the fix in. You know, it's unfortunate, but it happens all the time in the sport of boxing, even though, like you say, all those other sports have had problems, but it doesn't stick to them like it sticks more to boxing, even though boxing hasn't had that many problems with it.
Yeah, and you know what? One of the reasons might be that we're still the one sport, if not the only sport, that still we have human error.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they pretty much eliminated that from football and baseball with the instant replays and hockey. Even the hockey goals are reviewed and everything like that before a final decision is done. But in boxing, we can't review the score. The judges mark the score. They're picked up individually after
each round.
Each round,
yep.
And they're totaled at the end of the bout, and that's pretty much it.
Mm-hmm.
in a rare instance, there may be a miscalculation, and that's corrected the next day. But other than that, whatever the human score is, that's the way it stands.
Yes, and I guess we'll hear more from the past. I mean, we can always go all the way back to the long count decision back in with Jack Dempsey and those kind of things. I mean, there's always been something in boxing, some kind of decision that we've seen that the public will not like, whether they're for or against a guy. Of course, that if they didn't like the decision and it goes against the guy that they were rooting for, then that leaves a bad taste in their mouth. And I guess that's something that we'll always have to put up with.
Well, and again, boxing is different than other sports.
Mm-hmm.
The only sport that I can really compare boxing to, as far as the people who follow it and their loyalty and their dedication to that, are soccer people, because we associate that sport with our culture, our race, our ethnic background. Runs deep in soccer and boxing, and sometimes our pride in who we are and where we come from is so deep that we can't admit that our guy lost.
Yeah, that's true. And some things.
But that's what makes the sport, Earl. That's
yes.
What makes the sport.
Yes, it's been around for a long, long time. I don't think boxing is ever going to go anywhere. It's been around for hundreds of years. It's one of the first sports. I mean, man-on-man competition, it's something about that, Frank, that man-on-man competition is very special. I would look and say that, it's just a special sport because it is one-on-one competition, unlike all of our other, which are basically team sports. I've always like that action of one man going against another in a sport that's defined by how good you are in the ring or how good you do than it does as far as team sports.
And it doesn't matter. You know this as well as I do. It sometimes it comes down to it doesn't even really matter how good the guy is. For instance, for myself, I know he doesn't have the talent or the skill level, and he's going to get beat. But daggone it, he's got that Mexican flag on his boxing trunk, so who I'm going to be rooting for. And that's just the way it is in boxing.
Yep, it is. It's strange. It gets that way. But, yeah, people root for one it's just a part of their culture. They're going to root for that guy, even if they don't know him or like him or anything about it. But they're going to root it because he's a part of their culture.
Yeah, and that's like what you said. That's what has kept this sport around since the dawn of man.
That's for sure. Hey, Frank, it's always a pleasure talking with you, my friend, and talking boxing. I might have to call you up again and talk some more boxing with you at other times. And, it was a little bit of a shock that Timothy Bradley beat Manny Pacquiao, but now we'll get a chance to see how that goes in the rematch. A lot of people tried to put it on Bob Arum, of course, and Arum, he called it a shame, but he's going to make a lot of money off this rematch. I don't know. How much do you think if Bob had any influence at all in this decision? Because I know a lot of people are putting the blame on Bob Arum.
Well, all I can say about this is I don't know why he's being so negative in everything that he's saying.
Yeah.
Because, as you said, if there's any one person in the whole world that's going to profit off this situation, it's him.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like he's blowing smoke up somebody's ear. As far as I'm concerned, because he is really the only one that really is going to profit from this.
Yes. Hey, Frank, good talking with you. And hey, my buddy Bob Every wanted me to tell you hello, because Bob is going to be our next guest talking more about the fight coming up.
Okay. Well, you tell Bob I said hi. Long time no see, and we got to get together sometime, all three of us.
Okie dokie. Hey, Frank, we'll talk to you later, buddy.
Thank you, Earl.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And that's Frank Garza, esteemed referee in the state of Michigan, one of the best in the country. He's refereed all over the world, and he's been very good doing it for many, many, many years. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Sarah Lawrence Lightfoot has always been fascinated by goodbyes.
He's looking at you, kid.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
I'll never let go. I promise.
While we celebrate beginnings, she says, we rarely appreciate our farewells. I'm Neil Conan. Exit the endings that set us free. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up at 3 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
A windy day today, partly sunny with scattered rain and thunderstorms and a high in the mid-80s. Tonight's low 61 with a chance of showers and thunderstorms. Sunny and breezy with a high in the low 70s Tuesday. Looking ahead to Wednesday, sunny with a high staying in the low 70s. I'm Scott Pohl.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527, or toll-free, 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. Well, let's bring in our next guest, Bob Everett. We're going to talk about the fight, more so about the Pacquiao and Bradley fight. So let's bring in our good friend, Bob Everett. Bob, how you doing, buddy?
Oh, I'm doing fine. How are you doing?
Okay. I was surprised. There are so many people that, you know, took a negative stand, which I understand a lot of people disagree with the decision, but You know, as a judge, as judge, sometimes, I mean, you're going to have decisions that people don't like, and obviously, a lot of people didn't like that decision and how it turned out.
Well, boxing, as you know, Earl, being a judge is such a subjective sport, and basically, how you align yourself out with any one individual, whether you know him or you don't know him, but how you perceive him to be, and then that kind of entices you to either like the guy or not like the guy, can lead you down a path maybe of why you would vote one way or the other. I actually thought that Pacquiao won the bout, and I go under the premise that if you're the champion, you must be beaten. And I think the problem that Pacquiao has is that he's considered such an icon in boxing these days that, and you know, Earl, that the difference between a great fighter and a good fighter is very little.
Yep.
So if a great fighter goes out and he's not on his game that day, he becomes a good fighter, maybe fighting another good fighter that's at the top of his game that particular day, and then it calls for an interesting outcome. And I think that's just exactly what happened. Pacquiao wasn't at his best. Bradley was. And even though a lot of people thought that Pacquiao won the bout, there's an argument in there one way or another, that gray area where anybody watching the bout, depending on who they favored and who they liked the most, could see it one way or the other. But I thought Pacquiao won the bout.
Yes, and that's what I heard from everything I've heard. But then I started reading how the judges, two of the judges gave the last six rounds to Bradley. One judge gave him four rounds of those last six rounds. So apparently they thought that Bradley was closing in. All the judges felt that he was closing the fight. It wasn't certainly the runaway that so many people thought it was.
Well, and that's true. Now, there was an article in the Los Angeles Times where Bob Arum was quoted as saying, you know, if the judges hadn't been inexperienced, you might have seen an entirely different decision. Well, you know, I beg the difference with Bob Arum, but Jerry Roth and Dwayne Ford have been judges that have been in boxing forever. They were probably two of the most experienced judges that Las Vegas has. So I don't know where he exactly was coming from that angle, but one thing is for sure, he stands to profit the most because he has contractual rights to both fighters.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think he'll, you know, sometimes, you know, when you bark real loud, you wonder why you bark that loud. Now, nothing should be surprising to Bob Arum as far as boxing is concerned. He's been in it long enough to know that these types of things happen all the time. So I'm not quite sure what his M.O. was for raising Cain like he did. You know, some people thought it was a good decision. Some people thought it was a bad decision.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm not sure why he was. I mean, he's got all the rights. He's going to make the most money in a rematch. And maybe it's because he's feeling guilty, you know, because he's raised that. Oh, we're going to have a rematch for sure, and he's going to have the rights to it. So it's interesting, and Pacquiao, he wrote it in Pacquiao's agreement that it would be a rematch, and maybe that's a way to keep Pacquiao bound to him, because then I guess if Pacquiao wants to, he could have broken off from him and from Arum, and if he wants to go fight Mayweather on his own.
Yeah, the thing with this whole scenario is that Bob Arum does hold all the cards, there's no doubt about that. And, Pacquiao has not been the hungry Pacquiao that we're used to seeing.
Right.
His last five fights have gone the distance. Here's a guy that's supposed to be pretty much an assassin when he gets in the boxing ring. So you wonder if he's maybe coming to the end of his rope.
Mm-hmm.
I know from boxing, and I boxed amateur 10 years, and certainly I was no Manny Pacquiao. I don't ever profess to be anywhere near that, but I fought on the U.S. amateur boxing team, and I fought in the 1968 Olympic boxing trials, so I have a little idea what competition's about. And you go in a sport like this so hard, so fast, so long, it's never a gradual decline. I think you just wake up one morning and you say to yourself, man, I've had it, this is too tough, I don't want to do this anymore. And you stay in it a little longer after that than you should, simply because you want to make sure that you're making the right decision. And while you're making up your mind on that right decision, you could have a couple more bouts that positively make up your mind for you. And I think Pacquiao is getting pretty close to that that time. And so will Floyd Mayweather. I mean, it happened to Muhammad Ali. It happened to Rocky Marciano. It happens to everybody in the fight game if you stick around long enough. You just get burnt out. And then when you get burnt out, you start to lag in your ability that you had maybe a year, certainly prior to that. And I just think maybe he's showing signs of getting disinterested in the sport. And when you get in with a guy like Bradley, even though he's not a big puncher, he's had 12 knockouts in 26 or 29 bouts, they can give you trouble. And I think that's where he's at right now.
Yes, because Bradley, not known as a knockout artist, he only had 12 knockouts in his 28, 29 fights now, even though he's still unbeaten. But, you're right. If you get him to that point, as you say, all boxers do, sooner or later, you're going to get tired of it. You got to move on to a different lifestyle, a different sport, or a different occupation if you get into it, because it's a tough, tough business, as we know, Bob, and it's tough for everybody. If you get into boxing, you got to have a thick skin and you got to be tough. If not, then don't do it.
Yeah, exactly right. And two, I think maybe a lot of people that are casual boxing fans or fight fans don't understand that out of all the professional sports that generate the mega bucks, and boxing certainly is one of them, it's really the easiest sport to control by very few people. There are so many few people in boxing that control the majority of the percentage of the game, that it's you can do a lot of strange things. And you get a guy like Bob Arum, you get a guy like Don King, the Duvas, whatever, that are in a promotional business. They're basically the three guys that have run boxing over the course of the last 25 years. And I remember reading in Forbes magazine one time, not too long ago, when Tyson was in his heyday, that 90% of all the money involved in boxing is controlled by five or six boxers. And at the top of those five or six boxers, you have Bob Arum, and back then, more often than not, it was Don King. So, and then you had the Duvas. So you've got three people, basically, that run boxing in the world today. Now, you couldn't say that about baseball. You couldn't say that about basketball or football. So if you're trying to turn a buck and make a buck, it's probably easiest to do in boxing, because I think it's the sport that has the least scrutiny by outside agencies. Like, there's not boxing commissions, as you know. You used to be on the board. There's not boxing commissions in every state. And I could tell you a story about Joe Lipsy fighting Bernard Hopkins in Las Vegas and then having the fight trying to be moved to Phoenix, Arizona, because they had a little bit of a panic attack, thinking that maybe they had bitten off more for Bernard than they wanted to, because there was no boxing commission in Phoenix, or in Arizona, I should say, and they could control things a little bit better. So it's funny that way, but it happens.
Yes, and Bob, I know a lot of people don't really understand how boxing goes as far as the how people develop the scores in the boxing. I tell a lot of people to say, well, you know, it's judged round by round, and you have to turn your scorecard in after each round. And a lot of people don't understand. They think, like, if they see a fight and they don't like the decision that's we made, that they could go back and change that decision, and you really can't.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right, Earl. I mean, you know as well as I do, since you are a professional judge, that there's not, they will not accept a lot of erasure on your scorecard.
Yeah.
You do turn it in, so you have to be pretty specific of what you thought you saw in each round that you see, because once you mark that scorecard down and then hand it into the referee to be turned into the head of officials, it stays there, and then they tally everything up at the end of the fight. So, ironically, when you take a look at this bout the other night, you had 115, 113, 115, 113 for Bradley, and then 115, 113 for Pacquiao. That's not a wide range of discrepancy in the
right
scorecards. I mean, we've certainly seen worse. So, I mean, but it is subjective enough that people can see what they want to see, but generally, the judges most generally will go with the most popular fighter, and there's no doubt about it. In this particular instance, the popular fighter was the champion, Pacquiao, and I think that's maybe the mystery of all this, is why those guys didn't see him doing what everybody else saw him doing.
And, you know, Bob, I know you mentioned before we got on the air about how, you know, in the old days, you know, if you wanted to take the champion's title, you had to really basically either beat him down or knock him out.
Yeah, and that's and I think everybody accepts that. Even the fighters themselves that got in the ring and were the challengers to the champion, they understood that, listen, I'm not going to walk out of this ring unless I do something very significant. Now, you ask yourself, and you don't even have to be a boxing aficionado to answer this question, did Bradley do anything that was exceptional that would give him the bout over Pacquiao? And I guess you'd have to say, at least I would say, no, he didn't. You know, I thought he fought a good fight. He was, you know, he hung in there, and he had a sprained ankle, and that caused him some problems. I've had those before, and I know how they work in a boxing bout. But in reality, did he completely dominate the champion? And the answer, I believe, is no. So theoretically, the champion should have retained his title, and they could have set up a rematch after that. So who knows what the two judges that voted for him were thinking.
Yes, and one of them I had met before, Jerry Ross, who'd been here in the state of Michigan, and I'll have to wait till I see the fight this weekend, since I didn't get a chance to see it. I just read about it and read some of the round by round descriptions. So I'll just wait, and then I'll see how I scored,
sure,
and I'll score it this weekend and see whether if it was really that close. I mean, but everybody says it was a good fight, but I don't think it doesn't sound like it was close as they were saying it was.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's all very subjective. Now, Jerry Roth and Dwayne Ford have both worked Roger Turner's and Joe Lipsy's fights when we fought out in Vegas. They're very competent judges, officials. I mean, they've been around the business for a long, long time. I think they're decent people. I think they're honest people. Why they thought that Bradley did enough to win it, I don't know. I guess you'd have to ask them. But, I mean, as far as that's concerned, I think everything was up and up on their end. I don't think they dumped this for for some kind of deep-rooted thought about having a rematch with more money and then the winner fighting Mayweather. I mean, I don't think there's any of that stuff in there. But I do think, and quite honestly, that boxing can be controlled, and I don't believe that it's honest all the time. And, when you get into these mega-buck fights like Pacquiao and Bradley, and certainly Mayweather and Pacquiao, I think they're open more for criticism when the money is that big than maybe the smaller bouts. But it does occur in boxing quite often where you get, and you have subjective voting, that, you know, things maybe aren't always what they're supposed to be.
Oh, that's for sure. And that's the thing, because what we think out here from looking at it from an outside perspective can be totally different from what's going on. And that's part of the sport. Maybe that's part of the allure of the sport, because, everything even if it is on the up and up, you don't really know if it's on the up and up. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing.
Well, you know, and I was in it a long time on every angle. I mean, I boxed. I was a promoter. I've been a judge. I've been a manager. I've been an owner of a fighter. And so you see a lot of stuff, but for more often than not, it was all done on the up and up. I didn't see too many bad things going on, but I know that there are bad things going on. Whenever you put the money element in anything, you know, you get things going on that aren't right. It happens in our courts every day. It happens in our political system every day. It happens in our sporting events every day. Money, you know, for lack of a better terminology, is the root of all evil. And when you put a lot of money any place, you have to be very, very careful on how that thing is administered and regulated, because somebody's going to try to take advantage in some way that gives them an unfair advantage over somebody else.
Oh, so true. So true, Bob. Hey, I want to thank you for being with me and talking sports and talking boxing. We don't do that enough on this show, but, you know, we got to get more boxing fans out there, my friend.
Well, you know, Earl, I do a Wednesday morning businessman boxing workout at about 7:15 a.m. at the Crown Boxing Club. Now, okay. I got guys like Pat Gillespie down there and Kevin McGraw and John Pence, and have a couple of females that come down and work out at the Cooley Law School. You're more than welcome to join us, my friend.
Okay, 7:15 on Wednesday. Yeah, I might be able to crawl out of bed.
I appreciate the show. I appreciate you having me on, and have a great rest of the week.
Okay, thanks a lot, Bob.
Bye, Earl.
Okay, bye-bye. And that's Bob Every talking sports with us right here on AM 870. And how was your weekend, Aaron? I mean, it was a busy weekend. We had a lot of great sports going on this weekend. That basketball game was something. And now we're going to see the quintessential matchup between Oklahoma and Miami.
Yeah. I actually watched the third and fourth quarter of that game. Obviously, Miami pulled out there in the end. But, man, the story of the weekend is the boxing fight. I mean, even if you're not, like you said earlier, even if you're not, I guess, a fan or you don't really follow boxing that much, mm-hmm. I mean, I was just reading our article here, you know, and the guy is basically writing the same thing. You know, he was describing the rounds and, you know, it just, you know, Pacquiao landed, he said something like a total of like 90 some more, you know, punches.
More punches, yep.
Yeah, and you know, and it's, and they're coming up with these theories. Obviously, they're just theories, but yeah, that's the story. Other than that, lots, LA and Devils are denied again, you know, for that, and the golf was over the weekend, and we had the horse race, which was exciting as well. So yeah, lots to go on.
Yeah, I mean, one person even said that the fight, why the referees were against Pacquiao was because Pacquiao delayed the fight because he wanted to watch the basketball game. So he ended up watching the game, and that's why they said some of the people, at least some of the officials, may have taken that out on him because he wanted to watch the game, and they didn't start the fight on a scheduled at a time which would have been more conducive. I don't know if that's true, but that's just one of the rumors that was thrown out there.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if that is one of the rumors, I guess that's a little bit childish, but yeah. I a lot more about boxing than I do, but I understand that it is subjective, as far as the scoring is concerned, but I guess after reading these articles and people describing each round a little bit, I'm trying to dig some more and trying to figure out, you know, how Bradley did win this fight. But, you know, it is what it is. I guess they got to move on.
Yeah, and we'll see it this coming Saturday. I mean, they'll show it. They always show it 1 week after the pay-per-view. So we'll see it this Saturday on HBO, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Hey, give us a call, talk sports with us. Well, you can give us a call tomorrow, talk sports with us right here on AM 870. And tomorrow starts the NBA Finals. Should be a good matchup between Miami and Oklahoma City. We have two of the best young players will be going for the world title between Kevin Durant of Oklahoma and of course, LeBron James of Miami. So it should be a good one. They both got like three superstars on the team, or three young superstars. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes. We'll be looking forward to watching that tomorrow night. Hey, I want to thank you all for listening. Thank you all for calling. And come back and join us tomorrow right here on AM 870 WKAR. You're listening to Michigan State University Radio, AM 870 WKAR East Lansing. We come your way each and every day, Monday through Friday, from 1:05 to 2:00. right here on WKAR. If you've never called us before, we invite you to become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoons. Call us up. Talk sports right here on AM 870 WKAR East Lansing. Have a safe and pleasant evening.
Thanks for listening to Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR.